2024, United States of America versus Hussein Kamal.
Thank you, Judge Elrod. May it please the court, counsel. This case focuses the court's attention on the proper interpretation and application of guideline cross-reference 2G1.3C1, which effectively takes a traveler case, if you will, someone who's traveled and with the intent to engage a minor various sexual activities, and instead propels it into the production guideline, which, not surprisingly perhaps to some, has higher penalties associated, higher guideline ranges. The issue is one of first impression, but I think that the discussion today, initially at least, is best framed by talking about what we know, not only in terms of the guideline and the cross-reference, but also about this particular record. We know that Kamal traveled to have sex with a minor, an online victim is probably how I'll refer to this individual, a pseudo-victim. And we know that he wanted to take pictures of them. He wanted to take pictures of them kissing. He wanted to take pictures of her in a thong. He wanted to take pictures of them lying naked together. But what we don't know, what the record does not establish, is whether he wanted to photograph sexually explicit conduct, as that term has been articulated and defined by the Congress at 2256-2. And I think that's the critical inquiry, and that is the inquiry that I think that the court will hopefully will write about. The error here is that the district court conflated, if you will, the two ideas, the idea of traveling to engage in sexually explicit conduct with an intent or an actual practice of actually taking photographs of such sexually explicit conduct.
Standard preponderance.
I'm sorry?
The standard preponderance.
The standard, of course, is preponderance. And that begs the question, of course, because not only do we have a lower evidentiary threshold at sentencing, and we certainly don't contest that, but it does raise the question, well, where do inferences properly lie? Where can inferences be drawn? And to the extent that they are drawn, how far can they go? Because, in this case, the Congress has spoken specifically, and the Sentencing Commission has, as I think quite correctly, as it must, quite correctly alluded to the term sexually explicit conduct, and those words have to be given effect. The district court was free, to infer that pictures would be taken. But the district court was not free, and this is where I think the legal error lies, the district court was not free to actually infer the elements set out at 2256 itself. If it were the case that a district court could do so, then I would suggest to the panel that in any case, in any traveler case that mentioned the word picture, or perhaps even didn't mention the word picture but had the word camera or any type of allusion to that, a court would be free to basically infer the 2256 definitions, all six of them.
So we have naked kissing here, is that right?
That's I'm sorry?
That's the best, I hate to use that word, but naked kissing, is that that's what we have that we know can be depicted in the in a thong kissing if you prefer.
Well, it's not so much that I prefer, but the record says kissing. I'll use the term posing in a thong, but there might be kissing, and then of course if they were laying naked. And it's interesting to note, I think, and by 28J late in time last week pointed out that the Congress explicitly had observed in its legislative history behind 2256.
Now, you said laying naked. Did you mean lying naked?
Oh, well, what I meant is that they would be naked on the bed together. Some of these verbs. I'm 52, and I'm still not at a point where I know, laying or lying, they would be together naked. And
Why doesn't that meet the factors of lasciviousness? Unlike the Steen case, which I was on the panel,
yes,
where it's nudity not associated for any sexual gratification purpose. It's a voyeur case.
Yes.
Very different case than nudity associated for sexual gratification, which we know that the record is replete with these conversations about sexual gratification, that he wants her to do certain things to herself. He wants it's all geared towards his sexual gratification. Why isn't that enough when you have the nudity with the kissing for his sexual gratification? Why doesn't that meet our sister circuit's tests?
The Well, let me, if I may, because I think you alluded to a number of things that deserve comment. First, with regard to Steen and the DOS factors and what have you, if the district court was implicitly suggesting that this behavior would at least fall into the lewd and lascivious category, there's certainly no articulation of that. It's left purely for speculation in this court's at this point for this court's review. There was no discussion of that. But to the extent it was lewd and lascivious, typically would be talking about referring to genitalia and focus. I hate to say this, but focusing on genitalia, and that simply wasn't described here. What was going on here that may be unique, but certainly is the case here? You're absolutely correct. Mr. Kamal spoke about any number of things he wanted to do when they got together in terms of actual activities. But he was equally specific about what he wanted to photograph. And it's our position, I think Steen supports this, he did not say, and I want to take detailed pictures of your genitalia and what have you, things that I think would unremarkably qualify
as lewd and lascivious. But he did say, didn't he, that he wanted to take pictures of them together?
Yes, but together does.
What did the jury hear about this automatic camera?
The camera has a timer, and I don't know that I don't think we're talking about, like, say, a video camera, but certainly it has a timer, and that would allow someone to set it, and whether it's a 2 second or a 10 second or what have you, to be able to run forward and, for lack of a better term, perhaps get in position, if you will, and for the pose.
Well, did the jury hear whether you had to do that each time or whether it could do sequential?
I don't know, quite frankly, what the jury heard. It doesn't occur to me right now, Judge Wiener, and I'll investigate that. But certainly at sentencing, there was reference for purposes of the sentencing enhancement. The district court was aware that there was a timer. In fact, the court specifically alluded to that.
Well, then did the court know whether this was a delayed one shot or a sequence of shots set off by a remote timer?
I don't know. My answer right now, and I'll certainly correct it if I misspeak, the court said that he was, Judge Fitzwater said he was aware of a timer, but I don't know about the specific nature of whether it was firing multiple shots.
Well, let me ask you about one of the comments, the inference that the judge was making. He said, and won't you tell me if this was improper, he's talking about what we know about the chats, what we know about the phone calls. If you think you're talking to a 14-year-old, you're not going to be as explicit. You're going to reel her in like a piece of bait. Anyone can see from reading these chat logs that he's pushing and probing and seeing how far he can go. Now, I mean, you may call it speculation. The district judge may say it's inference. Is it not a valid inference to look at all that and say he never said the worst of the words that would make all this explicit, but he's reading, interpreting what Kamal was actually trying to get to and trying to decide whether this enhancement would apply. So there is an inference there based on things that you say are not quite as far as necessary.
I think, to answer your question, it is an improper inference, and it is specifically because what the Congress has done by requiring these specific, by setting out the 2256 definitions, is basically telling the courts, and certainly the bar, if there's actual imagery, and those are the easy cases where there's actual imagery, and it qualifies, it falls within this definitional scheme, all right, then we have sexually explicit conduct. If there's not actual imagery, and we're talking about someone describing what they plan to do or want to do, then we will again see, is the descriptor specifically enough to fall within the statutory scheme?
The evidence,
if it is, I'm sorry, Judge.
But it's the evidence and the reasonable inferences therefrom.
No, because I explained earlier, the only way to give effect, or hope I explained earlier, the only way to give effect to what Congress has said is to recognize they've essentially displaced the entire universe of inferences, and instead they're allowing inferences that pictures will actually be taken. But the only way to know what type of pictures would be taken are to look at the record, see how the individual described them, another way, and then go forward there. Some may fall in, some may fall out. And it occurs to me, Judge Elrod, I didn't actually finish the question you had addressed earlier because you had asked about sister cases. All of the other, I'm sorry, sister circuit cases. The other cases from the other circuits all have situations where someone said, not only do I want to do X, Y, and Z, but I want to take pictures of us doing X, Y, and Z. And the X, Y, and Z fell within the statutory scheme.
So you say that without that, we can't make an inference. And that's your whole case, that unless that there's an explicit statement that I want to take pictures of your genitals, that that you win. Is that you?
No. Here's how I would summarize the case. The rule of law that comes out of this case is a fairly simple one. When applying the C1 cross-reference, when contemplating the application, a sentencing court starts first with 2256, apprised of what Congress has said qualifies as sexually explicit conduct. It then reviews the record in the particular case. If the case has actual imagery, that's probably going to be an easy call because you'll look at the imagery and determine does it fall within the 2256 scheme. If it does not, if the case does not present actual imagery, then you look at what the individual had described. And if the individual has described images that he more likely than not contemplates taking, if those do fall within 2256, then the cross reference would properly apply. Absent that type of description, the cross reference cannot apply because you're not dealing with sexually explicit conduct. Now, I've spoken for the past few minutes about what the Congress has said because I think that the court, the parties, have to give effect to what Congress has said. There was the objection that was made. The written objection to the pre-sentence report set all of this out. At the sentencing hearing itself, the district court was completely silent as to the 2256 factors. I want to take a moment, though, in the remaining minutes that I have, and point out that this use of sexually explicit conduct by the Congress and then touched on directly by the Sentencing Commission when they included it in the cross-reference language is purposeful because what it does is it basically recognizes the differing degrees of complicity. If you had written that cross-reference and didn't make reference to sexually explicit conduct, then any type of imagery and a broad array of inferences could be made at sentencing to propel the traveler into a producer case if there was going to be any type of imagery made. But by using the term sexually explicit conduct, what the commission has basically said is this cross-reference basically is only going to take the worst of the cases, if you will, where we might have someone traveling and creating child pornography. Because, of course, the cross-reference goes to the production guideline, and the production guideline is addressing what I'm going to think of as the worst of the harms, where you're actually producing child pornography. That's the harm, in fact, that 2256 was promulgated to address, production of child pornography.
It's your position that the district court didn't apply the DOS factors, but it's not your position that the DOS factors couldn't be met on these facts, is it?
No, it is.
How is that?
Because the DOS factor, well, first of all, let me say that the district court was not required to apply the DOS factors. That would go, I think, to lewd and lascivious. There are any number of other ways. There are five other ways that 2256 might have been implicated.
Right. So, but what could it be alternatively affirmed because it's lewd and lascivious?
No, I don't think so.
Why not?
The record supports that because I think that the DOS factors would have required Mr. Kamal. Excuse me. Let me say it another way. If Mr. Kamal had been more specific about the nature of pictures he wanted to take, then perhaps they could have been considered lewd and lascivious.
You don't think it's lewd and lascivious to have naked kissing?
No,
that's not lewd and lascivious in the context of I want to have sex with you and I want to take pictures of us naked kissing.
No, under the law, I don't think that it is, and I'm not suggesting to you that it's not reprehensible. But as we all know, and I don't think it's a secret, if it is, it's an open secret. If the district court had felt that the particular behavior, egregious as it were deserving of increased punishment, the way that the court would arrive at increased punishment would have been under 3553A considerations, but not under a misapplication of the guideline.
What about the fact that the pictures were going to not have the faces, and so they were going to focus totally on the bodies?
The fact that they would focus on the bodies, I think, gives support because he didn't say, for example, and we're going to take pictures of us having intercourse without showing our faces, that would certainly trigger 2256, and he didn't say...
So naked bodies intertwined is not lewd or lascivious?
May I finish
yes.
my response? The intertwined is not supported on the record. It said that they would be laying together, but it didn't say intertwined, and so I'm reluctant to draw any type of inference from something that has no record support. But in any event,
okay.
in any event, were the question to come up where the district court's discretion was, I would simply suggest to the court that effect has to be given to the 2256 scheme. Thank you.
May it please the court, Catherine Miller for the United States. Judge Fitzwater sat through a three-day jury trial, listened to evidence that was reiterated at sentencing and was contained in the pre-sentence report and the addendum, and based on this evidence, he made a factual finding that Kamal intended to have sex with a 14-year-old eighth grader and that he intended to photograph his sexual encounters with her. Kamal has not shown this finding to be factual or clearly erroneous. There are two points primarily that I want to make. First is that Kamal's argument is factually wrong. The district court didn't leave it open as to its belief that Kamal intended to photograph sexually explicit conduct. The record shows that the district court was not confused about the definition of sexually explicit conduct. It found, based on the graphic chats, the fact that Kamal showed up with all of the equipment necessary to engage in sexually explicit conduct and a camera, that Kamal not only intended to photograph the 14-year-old in her thong and nude, but he also intended to photograph his sexual encounters with her. In fact, Kamal asked the 14-year-old during one of the chat sessions if she would pose for him. Now, my opponent argues that this would... that the court cannot make these types of inferences, that the court went beyond the bounds and that this record does not support factually the inference that the court made and that the court was confused about what the cross-reference applies to. But he ignores an important fact, and that is that courts every day in applying sentencing guideline enhancements make factual findings about a defendant's intent in other circumstances. For example, in Mata, in U.S. v. Mata, the district court had to decide whether the defendant there brought a child or used a minor to avoid detection. That kind of inference was based on circumstantial evidence, just like this court's factual finding was based on circumstantial evidence.
In fact, do you believe it's necessary that he was going to photograph them actually having intercourse, or is photographing them lying naked together, would that satisfy the statute?
That would also satisfy the statute, Your Honor, based on the definition of sexually explicit conduct. The commentary to this cross-reference says that it should be construed broadly and that it should be applied in all instances involving sexually explicit conduct. And in light of that commentary and the district court's recognition of that commentary, in fact, after the district court laid out what the cross-reference criteria involves, it also commented that it noted that the commentary directed the court to construe it broadly. The court then found that Kamal intended to take pictures, as he said, of the two of them lying together naked. And in answer, Judge Wiener, to your question, the record doesn't indicate whether or not the camera could take successive pictures without a resetting. Kamal merely told the minor that his camera could be set up to take pictures of the two of them, but there's no further discussion on that point. But yes, Your Honor,
well,
Judge...
Well, he had other things with him, too. He had condoms, Viagra, and all of that, as well as the camera.
Yes, Your Honor. And that is what the pre-sentence report described in detail and the addendum described in detail. The addendum, in particular, said Based on the sexually explicit nature of these chats, a reasonable person would conclude the defendant intended to take pictures of Devin engaged in sexually explicit conduct, since the majority of their chats involved sexually explicit topics. This is further substantiated by the fact that when the defendant was arrested, the police found condoms, Viagra pills, and a digital camera in his vehicle. The objection
below— Mr. Beard talks a little bit about, he believes overcharging, charging where this is really a transportation, going to see a minor, you know, for traveling for the purpose of then having a sexual contact, and not really a pornography case. And that was also an issue in the Steen case, where at the oral argument there was lengthy discussion about whether or not the government overcharged in that case, because it didn't really fit the cookie cutter idea of pornography and that sort of thing. Do you have any kind of response or comment in response to your opposing counsel's concerns that this isn't really this kind of case at all, and you're overcharging in a way that doesn't really fit, and that's what's causing all of these somersaults to try to affirm this?
I agree with my opposing counsel that there are somersaults in order to reach this cross-reference, and I'll talk about the evidence that supports that. But if the Sentencing Commission was concerned about overcharging and reaching a higher sentence for conduct such as here, it would not have put in its commentary, like I mentioned earlier, that the cross-reference is to be construed broadly. That is the most persuasive direction that a district court has in determining whether or not it should look at the conduct that we have here and apply the cross-reference. The commentary says it includes all instances in which the offense involved employing, using, persuading, and inducing a minor to engage in sexually explicit conduct for the purpose of producing any visual depiction of such conduct. So the district court was bound by those instructions and was required to determine from this record, was that Kamal's intent? And again, district courts make these types of factual determinations in a variety of contexts. And I mentioned
the issue, you're not really answering the question. The issue is not what the district court did with the sentencing guidelines. It's what the prosecutor's office did. That's what his criticism was of charging for something, and that's not in the province of, you know, are you charging in a way that doesn't even fit the case?
The facts support the travel. Unless I'm misunderstanding your question, Judge Elrod, the facts support that Mr. Kamal traveled from Ohio to Texas with the intent to engage in sex with a minor, someone he believed was 14. The prosecutor didn't indict Mr. Kamal for production of pornography. So the U.S. Attorney's Office didn't have before it or chose not to.
So only the district court had that decision in response to the PSR.
That's true, and the government argued facts consistent with the cross-reference, but it wasn't a charging decision. It wasn't in the indictment.
Okay.
Something else that my opponent mentioned was that none of the cases involved explicit chat, but that's not true. In fact, the Bohannon case, the court didn't affirm, the 11th Circuit did not affirm based on any chats. Mr. Bohannon didn't chat with the minor about taking pictures of her at all. The Bohannon court found that there were sexually graphic chats about what Mr. Bohannon wanted to do with the minor, and that he had cataloged prior sexual encounters with other women. And based on that, it found that the district court did not err in inferring that from the context of those discussions that Bohannon wanted to photograph his sexual encounters. Similarly, in Veazey, there was a very small part of the record that pointed out photographs in the chats. And the district court said there were multiple graphic sexual chats like we have here. Almost every chat that Mr. Kamal had with this purported 14-year-old involve sex. And he would constantly dangle in front of her a little bit. Do you like to kiss? Then he would go further. Do you like to cuddle? Then he would groom her into further sexual conduct and get her agreement to do so. And that's why Judge Fitzwater found that even though Mr. Kamal did not explicitly tell her, I'm going to photograph us engaging in these specific acts that I'm talking about, that was his intent. And that was an inference on his intent.
Counsel, we could accept your proposition potentially for this case. Let's take that as the premise. But we need, to the extent we ride on this, to make sure we're not creating the kinds of problems that Mr. Beard, I think, legitimately is raising, whether they fit here or not. What is the necessary part of your evidence, you think, before you could be applying this cross-reference?
I'll give you a list of the evidence, and I want to point out in doing so that these are the same facts in Vesey, in Mai, in Dye, and in Bohannon. In each of those four sister circuits found that this evidence was sufficient. Mr. Kamal engaged in sexually graphic chats with a minor on almost every online session and on the telephone with her. That was a significant fact in the other four cases that those courts relied upon in making the inference. He had a history of documenting sexual activity. His computer that he brought and a hard drive with him to meet the minor had a series of photographs. If I can refer the court to government's exhibits 63 through 74, involving a teenager that was posed in pornographic or lascivious poses. And there's no contest during trial or at sentencing that those were pornographic images. Those were entitled sexy teen dot certain number JPEG. Those were on his hard drive. And in isolation, it's important to remember that the district court looked at all of these factors together, not in isolation. So Mr. Kamal took his own teenage daughter back to Ohio after a month of visitation with a hard drive in his car, along with the Viagra and condoms and a teddy bear and a camera. And the hard drive had other pornographic images on it, which is an odd piece of equipment to bring with you when you're traveling with a teenage daughter.
Were any of those images depicting him engaged in sex with the other party?
No, Your Honor. He had, they were lascivious exhibitions of that young person's genitals.
Solo.
Yes, Your Honor. And he also had pictures of himself. Only one was introduced at trial and during sentencing, but there were multiple, the record shows from the detective's testimony, there were multiple pictures of Mr. Kamal with an erection and naked on that same hard drive. And so he had some comfort or felt comfortable recording lascivious exposition of his own genitals and cataloging or collecting those types of photographs and keeping them. He also had other pornographic photos of women with whom he had chatted. And that's an admission he made during his audio and videotaped statement with the detective from Greenville. That's Exhibit 59. He talked about how he had met this woman online and that they exchanged pornographic photographs. He also saved chats on the same hard drive from a previously sexually graphic chat with another young woman who was either 15 or 16 at the time, and she described, and this was introduced at trial and read to the jury, and of course the court listened to this evidence as well. This 16-year-old described her sexual encounters in great detail with a neighbor who was much older. And she told Kamal that the neighbor took photographs of their sexual encounters together, to which Kamal responded, "I wish you were here." And he said that multiple times when she was describing her encounters and the pictures that were taken of the neighbor and herself. in Mai, the Tenth Circuit considered very similar evidence. It was a perverted justice volunteer posing as a 14-year-old. The defendant solicited and inquired of the 14-year-old if he could take pictures of her naked on her hands and knees. And that was as graphic as the discussion got about the photographs that he wanted to take. He asked her if he could bring a camera. That happened here. He said he wanted to take naked photographs of her in an email. And the girl there agreed as long as the defendant agreed not to show anyone else the pictures. And that is the chat that we have here in Kamal. The teenager here expressed some hesitancy, which also lends credibility to the court's finding that Kamal was pushing and probing to see where he could go, because the 14-year-old here also said, well, are you going to show anyone else? And Kamal said, no, these are for my eyes only. I wouldn't want anyone else to see you like that.
Are you still listing your necessary facts? Have you concluded that?
I have concluded those, Your Honor.
Well, what necessary facts have to be in the pictures? Do you have to have you haven't gotten to the pictures at issue here. Does it have to be nude, for example? What are
yes,
the necessary,
Your Honor.
What's the threshold of the,
yes, I Your
assume
Honor.
That you meant in conjunction with the pictures, these were all other facts.
Yes. The district court considered, let me back up then to answer your question more specifically. The guideline requires that the sexually explicit conduct, which is defined in section 2256, be either of the lascivious exhibition of the minor's genitals, or that it be some kind of intercourse between the two. And I'm summarizing. There's a greater definition of that, but those are essentially what would be the case here. And
you have here in his conversation anything about sexually explicit acts on her own rather than between the two?
Yes, there are many chats, three come to mind, in which Mr. Kamal asked the minor if she had ever masturbated, and then he explained to her how to do it and asked her to try it out tonight, told her to do it in the shower, and then mentioned it again in later
Would
chats.
Would photographs of that be sufficient on the cross-reference?
Yes, Your Honor, because in the Steen case, as Judge Eldrod mentioned, the focus of the minor's genitals would be the purpose of taking the picture, and that therefore those chats that Mr. Kamal had with the minor were the basis of the district court's factual finding that those are the type of photographs that Mr. Kamal intended to take, not just of the minor and her thong.
Lying down together is extraneous, then.
Well, lying down together would also qualify. If they were engaged in kissing and their bodies were intertwined and they were both naked, and of course, it's a reasonable inference that the court made that Kamal said that their faces would not be included in the photographs to hide their identities.
And the purpose of those that he wanted her to masturbate was to prepare her for their sexual encounter. Wasn't that also part of the thing, that he wanted her to be ready for that?
He did.
Was it?
He,
so it was all in the context that he was going to have sex with her.
Yes, Your Honor. He wanted her to experience an orgasm so that she would look forward to sexual encounters with him. And then he went on to describe how he would massage her and rub her. And in the context of those statements, rubbing her all over, he talked about rubbing her front and her back and her behind. Then in that context, he also asked her if she would wear a thong, and then asked her if he could take pictures in her thong. So those were sexually explicit conversations and therefore lent credibility to the district court's inference. I see that my time is nearly up. If there are no more questions from the court, I'll concede the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I may, let me clarify something. I hope I didn't misspeak, but Judge Elrod, I was not suggesting that the government has overcharged in terms of the counts of conviction.
The count that they charged, you were just meaning that the guidelines applicability kicking in
yes.
on this.
It's a
I appreciate that clarification. Thank you. I misunderstood you.
We don't run from the facts, and as I suspected they would, because I would if I were my opponent. We've now retried the case a little bit on the facts, and I'm reminded of a television show, Hee-Haw, and if I can paraphrase, you know, if it weren't for bad facts, we'd have no facts at all. All of these cases are bad. I've been down 5 times this year, and every case seems to be the worst one ever. We're not running from the record. In fact, I would ask that we run to it, because what the government has suggested is that we said district courts can't make inferences. Oh, I did not say that. What I said was that the district court can make inferences that pictures were going to be taken. There were no actual photographs. But that the Congress also has the voices, and they have said, and any pictures that are contemplated would have to qualify as the Congress has spoken. I've got a number of other points. Kissing would not qualify Section 2256 conduct, not because I say it wouldn't, but because the Congress said that it wouldn't, at least in the legislative history. Bohannon, my opponent is correct, is a closer case, but still not one that is injurious to our position. In Bohannon, the individual had
noticed. Congress says in the legislative history that naked kissing with people laying next to each other doesn't qualify. Is that what you're telling me?
No, I said that it referred to kissing. Now, of course, that does beg an interesting question. You know, we have 3 types of described contemplated pictures, kissing, thong, and then laying beside each other, and we don't know from the record what the district court relied on specifically when trying to justify the enhancement. If you look at the sentencing transcript, what you'll find is the government's preoccupation was with nude photographs, and I'm doing this from memory, but I think pages 13 and 14 and 15 make that abundant and clear. The word over and over that was being used was nude, nude, nude. Again, Congress didn't say nude. It said pictures of intercourse, masturbation, bestiality, and sadistic or masochistic abuse. This is a situation we're saying where the court is free to make inferences up to a point, but the Congress has a voice in that equation. It's spoken very, very clearly and explicitly. I would also point out, Judge Wiener,
you forgot lascivious exhibition.
I didn't mean to forget it. It is there, but I've said earlier in response to your question, I do not think that the conduct as described meets that particular prong or that particular element of the statute. Judge Wiener, you had talked about what was on his hard drive. We don't have a situation here where Mr. Kamal had previous imagery of him having intercourse and these other things with other people. So this isn't a situation where the district court could say, aha, you've done this previously. Therefore, it seems a reasonable inference that you're going to do it here. That's not what we have here, and that's what, by the way, takes us out of Bohannon, which would be persuasive at best, and which I'd also point out doesn't have any type of 2256 analysis. I think at the end of the day, as I alluded to earlier, we require a rule. The Congress has said this is what sexually explicit conduct means. The Sentencing Commission has also used that term. I would take great issue with my opponent when she said earlier that the Commission says that a broad-based application effectively means that this cross-reference always applies. Well, no, by definition, it doesn't always apply. If a cross-reference always applied, you wouldn't need a cross-reference. You would have conflated the guidelines. If you look at the commentary, what it says is that there is a broad-based application, and it includes other forms of activity. And what the Commission is saying there is basically, if you're enticing, if you're commanding, if you're employing, there's a whole laundry list of verbs that would basically say all of that type of activity would come in for purposes of determining whether or not child pornography was being produced, child pornography being defined under 2256. If that were the case, we go to the production guideline. I don't think it's a particularly difficult legal analysis. I think basically what's happened is that the district court simply used the wrong legal analysis because it didn't start with 2256. Instead, it said, and he said, the court said at page, I believe, 35 of the sentencing transcript, this man's a predator, so on and so forth, and I'm not suggesting that the district court was in error there. What I'm suggesting is that the correct legal analysis must be articulated and must be followed to give effect to 2256. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.